This week on Retronauts, hold me, thrill me, kiss me, drill me. Everybody, I am Bob Mackey, and this is Retronauts, and I'm your host, Bob Mackey. I've said that before, and I'll say it again. Today's topic is Drill Dozer, and before I go on, who is here with me today?
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert, and I love drilling.
Who else is here?
Broken index finger, Nick Daniel.
Yes, that's what you get from playing Drill Dozer. And who is our final guest?
My hands are still rumbling, Chris Daniel.
It's true. We all have the Drill Dozer tremors now, and throbbing middle
and
fingers.
And broken GBAs.
And broken GBAs just hurtled across
just,
the room.
Just the shoulder buttons.
Yes, it will destroy your GBA. But yes, we're talking about the Game Boy Advance's amazing game by Game Arts, Drill Dozer. Before we start, I've got Nick Daniel and Chris Daniel on the show. They're my old buddies from way back at Youngstown State University. Yes, I'm incriminating all of us by saying we went there.
Go nepotism.
Yes, go nepotism. The fighting nepotists. It only took 17 years to get you on an audio podcast. I guess 10 years. I've been podcasting for maybe 9 years, so yeah. They had to prove themselves, but now they're here. Yes, they better not fuck up.
After this many long years, we prove we're not spies.
That's true.
You know, Bob, I always knew if I just attached myself to your star, I would eventually, you know, arrive.
My coattails are very short, and there's room for maybe like half a person. So
one who weighs a lot less than me.
Maybe. But
I'm just going to point out he kind of fucked up by being sick before showing up.
That is true. Yeah. Nick ruined this all by being sick, but we're going to soldier on. It's the Retronauts motto, I think. I'm making it up now if it isn't. But before we go on, I want to ask you guys, Drill Dozer, it's a Game Boy Advance game. What is your experience with it? I believe when this came out, I think I got it for one of your birthdays.
I believe you gave it for me.
Yes, and I think I gave
I'd never heard about it before then, which is surprising because I did follow all the magazines because, yes, kiddies, that's what we had to do in the old days.
Yes, I mean, it was a very late Game Boy Advance game, but I think I got Chris Drill Dozer and I got Nick the Game Boy Advance cart that has Castlevania Portrait. No, wait, what are the two Castlevania games? Aria of Sorrow and Harmony of Dissonance on one cart. I think that's what I got, Nick. This is all very important for the listener.
I enjoyed those things.
Listen, the year...
There will be a test.
The year, cart, what a deal.
The year is 2006. I'm buying presents for two people who have the same birthday. I don't have a lot of money, but those are great gifts, and I deserve credit.
Those are great gifts.
Yeah, come on. Yeah.
Thank you, Bob, giver of great gifts.
But what?
I'm not friends with any twins. I don't, and I'm glad I don't have to buy double presents.
It sucks.
It's a burden.
Policy.
I make it a rule that I don't befriend twins, so I'm not your friend.
You're lucky you were let in Henry's apartment to record this. But Henry, actually, you guys, like, what was your experience with Drill Dozer before this podcast? Like, how much of it did you play? Did you finish it on the cart?
Oh man, I mean, back then, whenever I got a platformer, I would just completely 100% it.
You know,
I'm crazy with it. I mean, this game gets really ridiculously hard with the final levels.
It really does.
But, you know, I got almost everything on Yoshi's Island. I did get through the Tower of Babel and Konoha.
And you also
play... Oh, yeah. I'm into it.
Didn't you also play all the Mega Man Zero games and, like, really got into those, too?
Yep.
Okay, yeah.
Got through all those. Love the Mega Man Zeros.
I think I S-ranked 3.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's a bit nuts.
Those games are way too hard for me. But yeah, Chris, this is a kind of game for Chris to play. And possibly Nick. I don't know, Nick. What was your experience with Drill Dozer?
The save files on his cart would indicate that I beat it. I don't remember.
I'm actually impressed that you finished this game legit. I needed save states in the future that we're living in now.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I actually didn't finish it. I probably moved on.
I found it easy. I mean, the bosses are a bit tedious, but it's attrition. You can just get through it.
Three levels.
Fake gamers.
Yeah. Well, we're going to find out.
Well, so my history with Drill Dozer was I was definitely intrigued by it, reading about it ahead of time as this, game freak making a game that isn't Pokemon. That just excited me. And it kind of called back to their older history with like Pulse Man and shit. So I was interested in playing it, and then it being a rumbling Game Boy game, which is only two of those, that also pulled me in. But when I bought it, I think I actually only bought it once it was on sale at like a Target where they were just dumping all their GBA games to make room for the DS. And I think that's why I played about half of it, and then I must have had some other DS game I just moved on to instead.
It was secretly a great DS game because, unlike the GBA, since your DS was new, it wouldn't break the shoulder buttons.
Yeah.
That was my experience with this game. It broke my shoulder buttons on my old-ass Game Boy Flip.
What a great birthday gift I got you.
Yeah, so I had to finish.
I broke your Game Boy SP.
I believe I finished on my brother's Game Boy because that's good thing with having twins. You both have Game Boy Advances, and I was able to finish that way, but my system got kaputs then.
Damn, well, apologies in retrospect, but actually, I think I played a bit of your copy way, way back in the day, but I didn't really play that much of it.
That maybe explains the third slot.
A few levels, yes, that my wimp slot, but I would dabble with this on ROMs and whatever, but I never would play much of it. This is the first time I actually finished the game. It's on the Wii U Virtual Console, by the way. The Wii U, for as much as people make fun of it, it is the only place to buy Game Boy Advance games legit digitally.
And DS games as well.
Yeah, which is weird because you can't buy them for the 3DS. You can't buy 3DS games. You can't buy DS games for the 3DS digitally. It's weird.
That would be too easy.
Yeah.
No, they just, because the Wii U, once they realized internally that they were going to shift all original game development to the Switch, they just said, well, can we just dump every ROM we have on this thing? That'll count as content, right? And they did.
I mean, it's the only place to play all those Castlevania games, all the GBA ones, which are great, except for the first one.
And also the Mario and Luigi games, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, does it even have Gyromite?
Gyromites?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
The game you play with Robbie the Robot?
I don't think that's
No, they don't release those at all, ever. I mean, I don't. I mean,
I went too retro.
I guess
off script.
I guess you could play it without.
Oh,
Rob.
I did.
Yes, but he's not Robbie the Robot. It's Rob.
He had a twin brother, not you know, so that counts as a robot.
It's true. You're barely people. But let's talk about Drill Dozer. So released September 22nd, 2005 in Japan, and February 6, 2006 in the United States. One of the last Game Boy Advance games in the U.S. and one of two with a Rumble feature. I checked Pokemon Pinball. Does not have a rumble in the Game Boy Advance version. Just a regular cart. So, mystery solved.
We look the fools if people have found our conversation before this.
If you heard our conversation a week ago, boy, they look. their faces are red. So, yes, WarioWare Twisted is the only other Game Boy Advance cart with a force feedback / rumble feature. But so at this point in America, the DS had launched, but it was sort of a joke. It was not until, I think, May of 2006, I believe, in which Brain Age was what really shot into the stratosphere in terms of mass market appeal. And then all those people started playing other stuff like New Super Mario Brothers and things like that.
I didn't buy a DS at launch. I waited like a year into it when they released the Electric Blue cartridge, which came out around when the Brain Age appeared, as well as the Advance Wars DS game as well. But I was kind of... The GBA, I love the GBA, but I was kind of done with it at this point because Nintendo was done with it. They weren't making Super NES-style games anymore.
It existed independently without another platform for 3 years. So 2001 it launched, and 2004 the DS was brought out on store shelves.
And
so
it's kind of hard to remember that the DS started, it was really a bad launch.
It was terrible.
It had really weak games. I think Mario 64 was the best game on it. They had a whole bunch of gimmick games kind of exploring the premise that were awful.
Pictopals.
Some horrible version of Yoshi.
Oh, yeah, Yoshi Touch and Go.
Yeah, which was somehow even worse than that Gravity one on the GBA.
Oh,
Topsy-Turvy.
Yeah, Topsy-Turvy, yeah. Like,
somehow worse than that.
All of the DS launch games are now just like iPhone 99 cent games, but back then they were $40.
Yeah, and it was like that for a year. And also, if you got one of the early DS, I believe Nick experienced this, the first two ones he got, Dead Pixels.
Oh, yeah.
I was lucky. I waited till the Electric Blue model, which was like, it wasn't a redesign, but it was the first, the second wave of systems they made.
Nothing is worse than a dead pixel because some companies don't even honor that as a return. I got a PSP for the first time in 2010 and there was one dead pixel. And I read the warranty. There has to be like 8 dead pixels for you to be able to send it back. So it's
get out your hammer.
At least 8 dead pixels and 3 rat turds in there. You can send it back. If not, you're screwed. But yes, so this game, known as Screwbreaker in Japan, a cool name.
Oh, wow.
Drill Dozer has got alliteration and you're literally in a drill dozer. So I think it's the better title.
Dozer's kind of a sleepy name.
It's true, but it's got so much power.
Yeah, I mean, you were never going to get to release a game with Screw in the title on it from Nintendo in America.
The Screw Attack was just the last time they could use that that name, that word in anything. So notably, Game Freak, they developed Pokemon. Game Freak is also the name of the fanzine that Pokemon creator Satoshi Tajiri made in the 80s and throughout the 90s that eventually became a game developer and became one of the world's richest game developers via Pokemon. But through the Pokemon years, they had very little opportunities to make non-Pokemon games. I think before this, they made one game for the PlayStation. It's very rare. It's called Click Medic. No one has heard of it. It's hard to find videos and information about it. But this is really the first time since the Pokemon franchise started that they were able to make something different. And since then, they've made things like Harmonite, Pocket Card Jockey, Tembo the Badass Elephant, and Gigawrecker. And they're all pretty good. They're not super great, amazing games, but they're all charming and fun.
And while they all have the they have a similar feel to Drill Dozer in that they're not particularly long, but they have a really cool gimmick at the center of it. Like they take Game Freak really is into like take a gimmick first and build around that. Drill Dozer is truly that.
It like, really is, design. Yeah. Like they do as much as they can with that one concept as possible. I have to say, I only played the demo of Pocket Card Jockey, and it could be the best non-Pokemon game they've made. I hear it's incredibly addictive, which is why I didn't play it. But it's like it's horse racing, but also solitaire. So they have some fun concepts to build games around. And I've only just heard of Gigawrecker, but I believe it is a like platformer, but it might only be on Steam.
Yeah, I played a little bit of that. I wasn't feeling it.
Okay.
To be honest, I mean, I have incredibly high standards for platformers, and they've stopped making good ones since the 90s, so I'm a sad person.
Whoa. Those are fighting words.
Yeah.
What about Shovel Knight, sir?
Okay, Shovel Knight's good, okay, but there that's you because go. It pretends to be in the 90s.
You belong on Retronauts. So the director of this game is Ken Sugimori. If you're a Pokemon fan, you'll know who that is. He is a huge Cheez It Game Freak, one of the initial people that started with the fanzine. He was initially the illustrator, but then he went on to be their art guy. So he illustrated the first 151 Pokemon, including true original Fat Pikachu. I don't like how they've got him in shape. He should look like Garfield, frankly. But yes.
I mean, Garfield lost his shape, too.
That's true. That's true. But yes, Ken Sugimori.
I'm still holding out until they recognize Missing No as the true 152nd Pokemon.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Are you like a Missing No truther?
Yes. This is the truth. He is
in
there.
It's a glitch. It's a glitch.
It was an intentional glitch put there by God.
God. Intelligent design in the Pokemon
world. God put it there as a test for us to uncover. But yes.
You have all failed this test. You do not believe.
Ken Sugimori still, I mean, you need more than one guy. Like, there is like a team of people. There's like a committee of people that make Pokemon now, and he is sort of in charge of them. But this is the one time he was given director's chair. He possibly just wanted to do it once, or maybe they thought he earned the right to have his own game at this point because, you know, Pokemon was huge. I believe they were on the brink of releasing the DS versions of Pokemon, so that would be the next year. But it was like huge. It's never not been huge, but he is the art guy, the creator of all the original Pokemon, probably some of the most recognizable drawings ever made on the planet Earth.
Yes, even Jinx.
Even Jinx. Hey,
Mr. Mime.
Jinx is worse.
They redesigned Jinx.
It was a reference lost on us or something. Yeah. I don't know. Let's move on.
I love the art design in this game. I also, speaking of art designers that became like game directors, it reminds me of the art designer on Akami who then directed El Shaddai. And it's a very art first type of game. And this, too, like the designs are just so pretty and cute. And it feels more like there is a Drill Dozer anime, and then this is the tie-in game to it.
You're right, yeah.
It feels like an anime first and a game second.
Some of the tropes are very anime. It's got a Lupin vibe there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and a lot of like the lighthearted enemies who become your friends and things like that. Yeah, it's very kiddie.
Feel very stock.
Yeah, it's very much of the kiddie anime variety. So other people behind this game, music is by Go Ichinose and Satoshi Nohara. And would it surprise you to know they've only done music for Pokemon games?
No.
But the music in this game is great, outside of one song you hear too much. But
it would be great if they would stop playing it.
Yeah, eventually in the game they do. So at a certain part of the game, not to jump too far ahead, once you power up your Dozer to the max amount, which happens in every stage, one song plays. It's about 20 seconds long, and it keeps looping, but it often plays for like 10 minutes at a time, and that is a big mistake. But it's not a deal breaker for me, because this is kind of like I'll listen to a podcast while I play Drill Dozer. Thank you.
Bob says that, but that's the music that plays on the Retronauts elevator.
Yes. It's also my ringtone, and I go to sleep listening to it. So the story of Drill Dozer is fun and cute. You play as Jill. Get it, I guess. Jill, Drill.
Jill and Drill.
Put it together. I just put it together now, actually. I was like, why is she named Drill? Oh, okay. So she's the daughter of a leader of the bandit gang known as the Red Dozers. So her dad was ambushed and is currently laid up. And the rival gang stole the Red Diamond, which was a gift from her dead mother. So Jill has to get it back from the Skulkers, another gang of bandits. And also there are other diamonds for some reason. I don't know why.
Okay. I mean, you say call out Jill and her father.
Her father's name is Doug, by the way.
Yes, but don't they have to at times call him Big Boss and her boss? It's a weird Metal Gear reference.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a Metal Gear reference per se, but it's like maybe it's like specific Japanese terms of like seniority that didn't translate well.
I'm just gonna say it's Metal Gear and try disproving me, internet.
Okay, you heard Chris,
a lot of tweets.
You heard Chris. Find out where he lives. I'll tell you after the break.
It's also a terrible gang because it has like one child. Two adults, one of whom looks like he's not fighting anybody,
and then
an old man.
It's true. That old man isn't very helpful.
I think we would beat them in a rumble. I just say it's something.
Well, they have the Drill Dozer, which I think kind of trumps most of our fighting abilities.
That's true. That thing is pretty rough.
You know what it really reminds me of is Yada Man. That's the one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get it.
I had to look that up at the double check. But yeah, having a trio of goofy thieves really is reminds me of Yada Man. Which I only know because of Tatsunoko versus Capcom.
That's really the only reason I know about a lot of characters, just because of that game that they paid a lot of money for and no one bought it. So this gameplay, as Henry said earlier, it's all about like milking the most out of one basic concept, and that's drilling. And drilling through things is fun. Games where you dig are fun, and destroying things is fun in a game. That's basically all you do in this game. So the way the game works is you're going through a stage trying to make it to the end, and you basically, your mecha that you're riding in goes through three stages. You start at stage one, and as you progress through the stage, you go through stages two and three of your gears. And as you upgrade your mech in a stage, you can break through different stuff. You can backtrack and break down things you couldn't before. And you can also do different things with your mech. And when you beat a stage, you go back to level one again. So the entire stage is a very routine progression of finding the gears in order and then breaking down what you need to break down in order and then fighting a boss. And that's basically how the gameplay works in Drill Dozer.
It's a really interesting choice because you're just so trained in games of like, when I earn something, you don't take it away. I earned it. Instead, having to reset every time you get the fulfillment of getting the first time you get the fulfillment of having the third gear, and then they just take it away. They're like, oh, you got to find a third gear every time in these levels. It's especially weird because Game Freak's main game, Pokemon, is about never losing anything you get to the point that you can transfer it through decades of games of like, no,
that's
you're
true.
Never losing this Pikachu you caught 20 years
this
ago.
This game is all about stealing what you've earned. And there's a story reason too. It's just like, yeah, your drill can't, you know, make it and the gears
break.
They
make the gears out of fudge. Yeah. And once you use them for a while, they get hot and melt.
Hot fudge comes out of the back of that thing.
It's really just your team engineer being shitty.
that's another good explanation.
So the drilling, the controls are very simple and they will break your Game Boy, by the way.
I'm also going to say the controls are wrong because the bottom button does not jump in a platformer.
The bottom button does not jump?
The bottom button does not jump.
Which button is the bottom button?
The bottom button is the, you can read things, you can interact, you can look around. It does not jump.
It's B in Nintendo systems, but normally B.
But in the game, it's A jumps.
Yeah, that's because Nintendo puts A as the right button.
Okay, so what's your point? I'm confused.
I'm saying it's a platformer and it's wrong.
Oh, I guess on the Wii U, it felt right to me. Like A was jump, and that's where it should be.
Mm-hmm.
You want jump to be the bottom button?
Yes, A for action,
every time.
Jump.
I don't care
like
for this.
It is on every game with an Xbox controller.
Okay, well, you know what? They mess up the format. In Nintendo world, it's
they
A
got
jump,
it right.
A jump, B shoots, and that's the end of the story. And L&R drill. But yes, L&R, you're doing all of your drilling. In some cases, it matters what direction you're drilling because the drill rotates in two different ways. And as you build up your gear, you advance to the next level of drilling by tapping the button at a certain point. And when you start drilling, a little UI thing takes up about a third of the screen. It's kind of like it's less distracting on a small screen, but when you're playing on a big TV, it's like a giant chunk of your TV.
It can be eye straining on a small screen too.
Yeah. I got used to it, but it could have been a smaller meter. It looks very stylish though.
Yeah. So this is the game that brings racing gear shifting into a platformer.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's like it's all a timing thing. It's sort of like a golf swing meter where you got to hit it to go into the second and third gear at the right time.
It's pretty cool. I think it's cool near the end when they start to utilize it more. At the beginning, it's just kind of a chore. Mm-hmm. But they do some interesting things with it near the end where you have to be in the correct gear to keep moving.
Yes, and those can be very frustrating too.
Also, they end up taking a lot of time because there's a, you know, certain, there's always a certain amount of time it takes to go from one gear to the next.
Yeah.
This is before the triggers were pressure sensitive.
Ah, that's true. Yeah. So I guess it's good for one thing.
Yeah.
And that's it. So you really just drill and jump, but they get a lot out of these interactions with various things like enemies, items in the stage. Non-boss enemy combat is pretty artless. You kind of just drill into people, and some enemies you have to attack from behind or the top. Yeah. It's what you'd expect. But I love just the amount of things you can drill into and blast yourself out of, and the various platforms that involve you drilling into them or through them. They do everything you could possibly think of you could do with a drill in a platform level. They will do it in Drill Dozer. Well,
except for, you mentioned before, they don't actually dig very often.
That is true. But I guess you dig horizontally. You
go through blocks.
Yeah.
But you never like just aim at the dirt. There's no dirt in this game.
There is no dirt. But I guess drilling.
Sometimes there's walls.
Yeah. Yeah. Drilling is just digging, but not downwards. It's digging in front of you.
It's not as digging. Yeah, you definitely drill a lot, but it's not like SteamWorld dig of just all the digging you have to do. It's not as much of that. It is more of a traditional style platformer, and just sometimes there's a wall in your way and you got to drill through that.
There's generally a prescribed path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some secrets you can find too, but you're not making your own way.
And sometimes there's a robot regenerating wall in your way, which you have to drill past at third gear so you can keep persistently hammering it.
Yeah, and they make drilling, like I said, they make it feel really good. They make it fun. The animations and the sound effects and the rumble. This is a rumble game, by the way. It even works on Wii U. It makes you feel like the impact of drilling, even though you're playing like a GBA game with tiny characters. It's conveyed very well, and it's just fun to just. In many bosses, you're just like locking yourself into a part of the boss and just like vibrating up and down as you're drilling into them, and they're freaking out.
You shove into an empty hole in them and drill away.
I think
baby.
there's an intentionality behind making the main character a little girl and not a guy. Yes.
I love the personality to Jill's like character design. Like you say, super simple pixel art, but when she gets a new drill and like throws it into the back of her mech and like kind of cackles to the screen, it's a lot of fun.
She's got like these bouncy pigtails. Honestly, she should have goggles on or be enclosed with all the drilling that's happening. There's some eye damage.
But also like the way her head sticks out of like the dozer becomes sort of like this round body for her.
Yeah, and it's got a face on it.
Arms.
Yeah. It's a really cool design. There's other stuff going on in this game. There's a minor upgrade system too. You're mainly just buying more like Mega Man style energy tanks to like have backup health.
Yeah, I'd say they're more like Metroid style because you don't have to activate them. They're there for the bosses, which are highly attrition based.
Yeah, they give you a surprising amount of health. And I'm just like, why is this happening? But then you get to like the third or fourth boss. You're like, okay, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, well, I need all these tanks just to figure out how to defeat this guy.
Also, even though the levels are peppered with like crates with wrenches on them, very few of those actually give you health.
Yeah, there's usually one towards the end that will give you back like an entire meter. But they stop doing that towards the end of the game.
Yeah. And the upgrade system kind of seems a bit weird until you get really close to the end or actually the end of the game. Because then it reveals that, oh, I can also get new drill bits to take out some of these special blocks that I saw before but can never interact with.
Yeah, so there is some backtracking involved if you want to get the special treasures in the game.
Also, if you want to get to the secret levels, each area has a secret third level that you have to purchase pretty much after you beat the game.
Yeah, and those levels are not fun.
Yeah, it's kind of the Yoshi's Island school of making sure you know what the heck you're doing.
Yeah, and I mean, we covered Yoshi's Island, but it's like I played one of those and I beat it after like hours. I'm like, I cannot do any more of these. I am not. You're rewarded with punishment in that game. It's like it's a great troll. It's just like you got 100% on every level. Now play this.
Well, the whole game is easy mode, and then hard mode is experience and the secret stuff.
I would say the game is kind of easy until the last two or three stages, and it's pretty tough. But I want to talk
especially
about
that timer on the.
We can get to that in a second. But I want to talk about the bosses, which I think are some of the coolest parts of this game. For a bit, I mean, so the bosses are for the most part in the beginning of the game. You kind of wait through an attack phase, and then they reveal a weakness. But they get a lot more involved later in the game. They play with the idea more. They realize, okay, we can't do any more traditional bosses. So this boss is sort of like a tennis match where you're knocking a missile back and forth, and you have to make sure you're drilling in the right direction. And also, it's all timing-based, so you have to make sure the missile gets to the other person before it explodes.
It's an interesting variant on whacking the energy ball back to Ganon because they add different elements. Your whack isn't instantaneous. You can choose within a period when to throw it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as that match goes on, you're giving less and less time in order to get it over there.
Yeah, and it's a hot potato, and it's going to go off, and you have to just time it right so it goes off on them, not
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's one of the coolest fights in the game. Also very frustrating. Some bosses, like the last real boss, is a level that you go into and have to disable things into it. And like Chris was saying, it's full of those tunnels in which you have to be in the right gear to go through them or else they shoot you back. And that is, they give you very little time to figure things out. It's sort of like trial and error. Like, okay, I go one on this one, and then two on this one, and then two on this one, and three on this one. You have to kind of know in advance because you're not given a whole lot of time to figure it out.
There are like two or three sections. That one section they do correct where there's lots of bends so you can see what's coming up. The rest of them you have to pretty much know, or they actually have these little TVs that will show you need to shift up or shift down, but you have to be pretty cagey to catch that.
And they're very hard to read at speed.
They're pretty hard to read, but yeah.
They introduce that when there's a time section, so it's not like, you know, you have time to figure it out. You have to figure it out now.
Yeah, yeah, it's very much like towards the end of the game, it starts getting in, like in terms of like difficulty, like old school 8-bit difficulty, where it's like this is technically finishable and this is a very well made game, but it's more like you have to learn this. We're not going to give you a lot of chances. Luckily, the continue system is pretty forgiving. For 50 drill bucks, you can continue, and you continue where you died. Not exactly where you died, but if you died on the second stage of a boss, you will start over on the second stage of a boss.
That's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Which is pretty nice.
The colorful bosses, they have a lot of personality too. It reminds me of Gunstar Heroes a bit.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, I get a real Gunstar vibe from this. But
and with all their like different tricks to them too, is very Gunstar kind of stuff.
Yeah, and they're all like huge bosses too, with like lots of moving parts. Any other bosses, Nick or Chris, I'm forgetting about, that are cool and interesting?
I think the weather control system has a pretty awesome fight.
Is that like, so one of the stages, like halfway through, you get a propeller, and it turns into a sort of hovercraft game where you control way differently. You basically fly around vertically and you can hover, and the entire boss is around controlling you, your pilot flying around.
Yeah, but pretty much if you want to go down, you have to lose your drilling. You have to go down to zero gear and start back up. So it could be a bit difficult, but essentially the boss starts out as variations on a maze you have to climb. Because at first the maze is full of smoke, so it's kind of hard to see your way. Then it becomes full of, I believe, energy that
they have wind that blows you around.
Wind. Yeah, wind. So you can't touch the edges too.
And then later it gets to lasers, which means you have to remember you can hover, which unfortunately they told you about at the beginning of the level, and it's possible you can forget.
Yeah, because you don't have to hover before that. It's something you can do, but you don't have to. But it's easy to forget, like, oh, I can hover.
Also, if you're getting real frustrated with the levels, like they bring up the text and you're just like hammering on the button past it.
Shut up, I want to beat the boss, yeah.
This game tests your reading comprehension.
But, also, is really tough with the hovering, the flying part, is that when you have to stop your engine to descend, but you don't immediately start going up. Like, there's a bit of acceleration to getting back up, and it varies depending on your gear, so you don't have the tightest control there.
There's a lot of nuance to how the flying works. Also, there's swimming in the game, too. So, again, they do everything they can with the drill. So, it's like, you can use a drill to drill through things. How about you use a drill for swimming underwater? And that controls a bit like the flying, but you're not, like, viewing your craft from an overhead perspective.
Yeah. I feel we should make clear that when you're drilling most of the time, you have a lot less control over your vehicle. Mm-hmm. It starts, you can walk at a crawl, you can't jump, you can't steer it, so you have to know what you're doing before you start drilling.
You can walk forwards and backwards, but that's about it.
At a crawl, yeah, it's very slow.
I like the animation of when you're drilling forwards but walking backwards. You sort of got her like a shoulder up on the seat and is looking behind her. It's really cool, like you're backing up a car or something.
Yeah.
But we're talking about, so this game, I think it's pretty reasonable. The last few levels are super, super unforgiving. That boss we talked about earlier is one of the features of this game that I feel like is a little unfair. But the last level, a lot of this timing-based stuff, I feel like even with save states, when I want to get to the end, for the podcast. I just want to save state my way through. Like, even with save states, I'm like, wow, I had 2 seconds left to go. And I was like save stating, like, okay, I did a perfectly save state. I did a perfectly save state. It's like, how, like, you really need to, like, learn this.
That last time section.
Yeah.
On the rocket drill. If you're save stating, you can really easily get yourself in a corner where you cannot beat it.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, I was like through trial and error. I was like, okay, this is the way I go now. I'll save state. And like, I would figure it out. But even with all of those safeguards built in, like if you took out the save states, it'd be like the optimal route. It was just like, I had 3 seconds left for this. So you really have to be on the top of your game. And then there's one part of this final level where you're escaping and it's like, you have to do it perfectly because like an explosion is chasing you.
Well, they stop you at a wall that's impassable. And you have to keep on trying to drill into it because eventually it'll just open a millisecond before you need to get out of there.
Yeah.
But if you give up, you're just toast.
Yeah. And in that case, I'm like, okay, what do I do? But I was like, oh, yeah, it's just very hard.
Yeah. I died several times thinking there was some gimmick or something to get through it, but it really is just hold down the button.
Yeah. And it's like, it's like pixels behind you. But what I think is really funny is that, nah, spoilers, by the way, I'm going to talk about the final boss of this game where, so you the final. So you drill through the base of the boss, and the base crumbles, and the boss comes
giant
out.
Giant mobile base that's crushing the city.
Yeah, it's really cool. And the boss comes out in sort of like a Dr. Robotnik, Koopa-style, like little floating UFO thing.
It's very Dr. Wily, because he's done this in a couple games, where he shows up as like an alien dude.
They all have the same like personal like egg UFO that I believe, I just saw a tweet, I think Frieza invented this.
Yeah, that was perhaps the theory, that Frieza first appeared in like 90 in the comics, and then it was 91 for Bowser. And
I think it was 89 in the comics, maybe, yeah. But yes, he appears in this UFO. And at this point, your drill dozer is broken. The drills fall off of it. And all you can do as this little girl in a drill dozer is like wind up and do a little wimpy punch. Mm-hmm. And basically, the boss has a full health meter. You're like, well, how many times do I have to hit him? You hit him once. And
yes,
that's it.
But it's very tricky because you have to be patient or have incredible time in.
I found it was not as difficult as everything that preceded that fight.
That was the one continue I used in the whole game.
Wow. But yes, I think it's funny. It's just like, oh boy, this boss fight. But the last boss, it's a little girl punching a guy in the face, and immediately, like, he falls to the ground, his helmet breaks, and he runs away crying.
Well, he is flying into the fist. It really should break her arm.
I agree, but I like how it's like, that is the big fight.
That's a hilarious ending.
Yeah.
I think, too, it's another... Well, there's so much personality to it that they really get out in a lot of dialogue. Like, old Mega Man games that this is kind of similar to. It didn't have that much dialogue in it, but they take a lot of moments to really have conversations between Jill and the rest of her team.
Yeah, there's lots of, like, little two-sentence codec conversations that have between them. They're not overbearing or anything, but there's also, like, what I thought they were setting up more levels, and I was like, oh, I just wanted this to be over so I could podcast about it, but in the ending, these two villains you haven't seen in a few levels, they show up and steal two of the four diamonds and go away, and I was like, oh, do I fight them in, like, level 7? But no, it's sort
sequel
of just
bait.
Sequel bait that never happened. Mm. They never got to make Drill Dozer 2.
And those weird characters only exist so you can steal useful items from them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the first time you get the water power, the second time you get the air power.
I forgot. Yeah.
They only exist to steal from.
And we should clarify, these are two old women heads popping out of some sort of flying contraption.
They're sort of like the witches.
Everything's a mech.
They're kind of like the witches in Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. They remind me of those old ladies.
Except we don't know that they have bodies.
It's true. Mm-hmm. They could be just heads. And that's why they're stealing the immortality diamonds.
They want to get young,
Yeah. That
diamond is getting that one guy immortality. It works pretty well until it breaks, which
it's true.
You make it break because apparently overuse. It just needed one girl fist away from getting completely destroyed.
And the last thing you see in the game, I believe, is you see the red diamond and you see like the ghost of Jill's mother waving to you or something like that.
Yeah, that's a creepy, weird reveal where it's like, oh, this diamond I'm looking for, apparently my mother's in it. Oops, yeah. Who knows?
Or maybe her ghost.
And it can make robots sentient. Yeah.
Oh, it was her mother and the robot all along protecting her, just like Ava.
Wow. Yeah.
Actually, there's a big Ava reference in the last level. The enemy base is drilling down, and so your dad, Doug, is laid up in bed. It's like, it's going to reach Doug.
At the bottom of your hideout that's 27 layers deep. You are going crazy with this base.
You have to disable the enemy base that's drilling towards Doug before it hits Doug. So it's very Ava-like.
Yeah, that is exactly Ava. Yeah. No, I mean, it's a mecha show in general, but that kind of like preventing it digging through multiple layers to an underground base, that's exactly Ava.
Central Dogma was about to hit. Listen to What a Cartoon. So I think, like, after playing this, I feel like this, you could just do an HD remake of this and just put it on Steam. It feels, outside of some difficulty issues, it feels like if this came out, it never came out in 2006, people like, oh, what a fun indie platformer. This is great. I think, like, just like the Messenger of recent memory and Shovel Knight, people would accept it on those terms. And I feel like it does a lot of the same things that modern indie platformers do, in that it finds one gimmick and just exploits it to the fullest extent before it gets old.
Like, how are you going to swing over this thing? Well, why don't you drill into a hole and it'll carry over?
Yeah.
How are we supposed to lower this drawbridge? Well, if you drill this screw in one direction, it'll go up and then you can get over there. It's, or the I really love the technique of having the different tunnels, and like one is the right drill, one is the left drill, and one's the right drill tunnel.
Well, I almost slipped up there, Henry. Red is right and blue is left. Remember that. It works in real life too.
I really think the one thing that'd be different if this were a modern game is that way more of these like jumps would kill you if you fell.
Why is that? I'm confused.
Just nowadays, more games are made to be like, you know, brutal mass core.
That's true. Stuff. I guess they could turn up the mass core stuff, but actually make the checkpoints more frequent.
Maybe. Like, I'm not saying it'd be better.
Super Meat Boy, yeah.
I'm just saying, like, a lot of times in this game, you know, if you screw up, you'll fall back a little ways.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, modern games, I think they'd just kill you.
If they ever bring this back, I hope they don't make it harder.
Well, this had a real... They were selling this for a Pokemon-aged audience, too. This wasn't for the mega hardcore in its that was what they say the later levels
Well,
were.
Did anyone know those people existed then?
Yeah, that's true. They didn't. I don't think Nintendo still knows those people exist. They the hardest stages they make in Mario games are only for people who have beaten every single other thing you can do.
By hard, it's like, well, this is where the game should have started in a lot of cases. Like with Super Mario 3D Land, they've gotten a lot better about it since then.
You're
a
3D Land hater.
I despise that game.
I never finished the quote unquote
Bob can't
easy
find
levels.
Three friends.
What are you talking about?
Now that's World you're thinking of.
Yeah, 3D World. Get your facts straight before you slander me on the air. So yes.
No, everyone slanders you on the air.
I know. Viewers, listeners do it too on Twitter. So any other final thoughts about this game? I think it's a fun little treat. It's not completely amazing, but I had a lot of fun playing it because there's nothing else like it really. And I like when Game Freak gets to do this because they have the privilege of just being like, we made Pokemon, we're making this now, okay? Get out of the way.
I think Harmonite is still my favorite of their not Pokemon games post Pokemon, but this is right up there, and I think it got a raw deal in that it was released on the GBA when Nintendo was not going to advertise it for shit.
It should have been a DS game for sure.
They should just port it to DS.
Well, it also been called From the Makers of Pokemon.
Yeah. And instead it just kind of got dumped. It got dumped on the GBA, and then the next time it's available, it's just dumped onto the Wii U, which nobody was playing either. Like the least bought Nintendo system ever. Like it should be. Well, they'd really have to do a lot to make it. It could work on the Switch as just a port, but they
yeah.
Need
what is the Switch's retro plan? It's like
nothing.
You get Mario 3 again.
No, not even that. Right now, it's just arcade games. Like that's all you can.
I thought about like I thought their like monthly plan they're coming up with, where it's like you get these two retro games.
Oh yeah,
and
eventually.
Like they're openly saying Mario 3. I mean, Mario 3 is great, but I bought Mario 3 like four times.
I'm probably at seven times now. Let's see.
In terms of digitally, I bought it for...
Guys, piracy exists.
I know that. But no, I'm pro-piracy, by the way. But I bought it for the Wii, I bought it for the 3DS, and for the Wii U. So I bought it three times.
Let's see. NES, Super NES on All-Stars.
Oh, I'm just counting digitally.
GBA. Oh, okay. Never mind.
But after you buy a game eight times, it's like, yep, steal it. Like, just go ahead. It's fine. But yeah, I hope the Switch thing works out. Maybe Drill Dozer will make it. God, release a lot of, like, these games are not being played in any capacity because they were late GBA games. No one really knows about them.
Probably the more expensive carts.
Oh, for sure, yeah. But yeah, Drill Dozer, recommended by all of us. Check it out.
I don't know if you could have made a DS game, though, just because of the big hardware you need to make it rumble.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there wouldn't be a rumble.
Rumble packs for DS, on Metroid Pinball, man.
Oh, there's a separate rumble pack?
Yep, with a DS rumble pack. Three games ever used it,
I think. What a waste of time. Then. Yeah. But yes, we approve Drill Dozer. It's Retronauts approved.
I feel like what holds it back, though, is to get to the really cool drill stuff, that's like halfway through the game. So it's have to go through, you know, some more standard platform before it shows what it's really great at.
I still had fun with those stages, but you're right. And then it gets too hard. But I feel like overall, like if you were
that's when it gets the adequate level of hard.
for Chris Daniel, maybe. But if you were to
I'm talking all tough, but I mean, I can't play those Super Meat Boys, so I'm not that tough.
If you were melt,
I'm 90s tough.
You're 90s tough. If you were to melt this game down into like a slurry, it would be acceptable. So that's my evaluation. And thank you for listening. And ask, go into GameStop and ask for it right now, and they'll throw you out and they'll sell you a Funko Pop on the way. But yes, thanks for listening, folks. This has been an episode of Retronauts. And in case you didn't know, we are funded by Patreon and perhaps a listener who is like you, if not you. And if you want to fund us, I'll tell you what, buddy. For $3 a month, if you go to patreon.com/retronauts, you can get every episode of Retronauts a week ahead of time and with no ads and at a higher bitrate. It is the ultimate ideal way to listen to Retronauts, and you will get a code that you drop into whatever you use to listen to podcasts, and it will download our bonus stuff just like it downloads your normal podcast. So you'll be ahead of the game. You'll know what we're talking about a week ahead of time. You can ruin our opinions for other people who can't give us $3 a month, and that equals out to like 50 cents per podcast. I think I'm worth 50 cents per hour. Honestly, come on, people. So check it out, patreon.com/retronauts. And everybody else, Nick and Chris, you're our special guests. Nick, this is your first Retronauts podcast. Hopefully not your last. Where can we find you? By the way, Nick Daniel, I'm bearing the lead here. Nick Daniel does all of my cover art for my episode. So he'll have drawn the cover art for this one, and it better be good. So Nick, please tell people where we can find you and support you. And I know you have a Patreon too.
Yes, I have a Patreon. It's LK Comic. And also, that's for my webcomic, Latchkey Kingdom, also available at latchkeykingdom.com. It's about kids in a fantasy setting with no adult supervision.
It's kind of like Zelda.
It did start as a Zelda comic. Yes, well, we don't want to scaring people off.
Nintendo might be listening to this podcast, Nick.
There's no sex.
No sex.
But, I mean, if you want, you can imagine the characters having sex if you want.
Up front, no sex. Where can we find you on Twitter, Nick?
What's the button to make Sonic and Tails kiss?
On Twitter, I'm Psych with a 5, that's P5YCH, and I take commissions there at the pinned tweet has the details for that.
Yes, so, and stop confusing Nick's art for Jeremy's art.
Yes.
That's an order.
You can hire me to make art like
that.
If
you do one thing, do that. Don't go to his Patreon. Don't go to his comic. Just stop that.
Give him free praise. So, Chris, how about you?
I don't have much of a presence online. I have my Twitter, which is Chris with a CH, G Daniel. And there I post sometimes some video game things. Sometimes I retweet political things and don't do too much. My day job, I am a programmer for video games at High Voltage Software. Done, you know, games like Conduit, Saints Row, Gat Out of Hell, ported to Mortal Kombat, Number 9, you
Harvey
know.
Harvey Birdman.
Yeah, Harvey Birdman a million years ago. Uh-huh. Maybe someday we'll talk about that on Retronauts because it is 10 years old.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Damage Core, which is a great VR game, and what I'm working on now, I can't say. If you have six figures a year to give me, you can maybe hire me and get me to work on your games.
You heard it. I think $3 a month to give the Retronauts is more reasonable, Chris. But
I think $100,000 to give to me is more reasonable.
Hey, you can put characters in the Latchkey Kingdom for as low as $1 a month.
Well, wow.
Do that. Whatever you do, don't do that.
And Henry has a fabulous offer for our listeners, if you haven't heard enough.
Well, look, if you like podcasts with me and Bob on them, you can get your fill of those at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, where me and Bob go through a different episode of The Simpsons every week in chronological order. Deep into season 8 are we, and you can hear every episode a week ahead of time and ad free if you sign up for $5 a month at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, where you'll also hear early and ad-free episodes of What a Cartoon, where me and Bob do the same thing for a different cartoon each week. That includes anime, that includes Batman, that includes King of the Hill. So many cool things. And lastly, on there we have tons of exclusives on the Patreon, like interviews with folks who have worked on The Simpsons for 30 years, like Mike Reese and Mark Kirkland. You'll learn so much if you just sign up today, patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
Thank you, Henry. And you're on Twitter, too?
Oh, yes, and I'm H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G. I can't believe I forgot to promote my Twitter.
Always be on Twitter, folks.
Always.
And never log off.
It's never wrong. All the opinions are great. Mm-hmm. All the takes are hot and good.
All opinions represent your employer. You, the listener, even mine.
As of this day, none of us have been suspended from Twitter.
It's true. So thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you Monday with a brand new full-length episode of Retronauts. Goodbye.